Welcome to another edition of the Canes Cast. This one, episode 8. We have not named this Michael Smith, but we do have a suggestion because special guest Shane Willis is with us. So episode 8.
Yeah, Nikki Stout came up with this. She's been hovering around the pod before as sort of the ombudswoman. The past draft eye. I think it's perfect.
It's the last Jedi play on Star Wars. Whatever. We'll go with that. I'm just going to welcome Shane Willis to the Canes Cast. Willie, and we have you in studio, too. It's even better.
It's great to be here, guys. It's been a long summer. It's nice to be back. Let's talk a little hockey. Talk about this up-and-coming Canes team for 2017-18.
All right. Well, I'll put it on the tee for you then, Shane. I'm Mike Maniscalco from Canes Vision and Hurricanes.com, Fox Sports Carolinas. Shane Willis, who runs the youth and hockey development programs here for the Carolina Hurricanes. Former 20-goal scorer his rookie season. Bumped down that list a notch by some guy named Sebastian Aho this past year. And that's Michael Smith, who's all things to all people when it comes to the web at Hurricanes.com. So, Shane, I'll put it on the tee for you. First one, what was the move or what moves have you liked the most this offseason by the Hurricanes, where looking from last year's team to ahead to this year's team, that's going to be an impact or a difference-making move?
Well, I think there was a lot of great moves by general manager Ron Francis, but two really stick out to me in my mind. One was the signing of Justin Williams. I think we saw the maturity in this young group really start to show at the end of last season. And when you bring in a guy like Justin Williams, who's been in locker rooms, has won championships, who really held the room in Washington. We've talked to guys. Yeah. They said Justin Williams really was the voice there trying to get things done. So bringing him back in with this young core that's really starting to develop, I think that was a great move. And then obviously the addition of Scott Darling. Making a commitment to this guy, a guy who's been in a backup role, who's hungry to be the number one, who's going to come in and compete for that job, but a big body who's ready to play and wants to play day in and day out in the National Hockey League. I think those two moves, to me, stick out the most.
Smitty, I don't want to hog the questions here, but I do want to kind of a follow-up for you, Shane, because you've been in this and you've lived this life where you scored 20 goals as a rookie. The next year, the expectation is, well, you're going to score more. Or you did this with this team. Now you sign with a new team. You're going to be better or do the exact same thing. So how is it for the players who are coming in, like Scott Darling? Everybody has looked at his numbers and said, well, look at what he did with Chicago. And if he does that here, how do you temper that? Or should you have that expectation that those numbers should be similar or they should improve from year to year?
Well, I think the main thing is the players know that too. They have an expectation of themselves coming into this season. And our fans should be excited because all these guys we're bringing in have great numbers and are going to contribute to this team. But I think the players also know, I love what Justin Williams said. He goes, I just got to come in and be myself. I'm not coming in here to be a captain, to be a guy, or do something that I'm not. I'm going to go out there and play my game. You have to stay within that as a player so then things don't get carried away. You don't want to set your expectations way too high because then you go out there, you start getting disappointed, the frustration builds. You want to come in. Getting off to a quick start is key for a new guy in a new organization, and I think very key for this team, which we've struggled to do in the past few seasons. Yeah. But I think these additions, the Hurricanes getting out to a quick jump, not only helps that confidence in the new players, but in the team and the organization moving forward.
As a player, you've been in this position before, you know, a guy who, as a rookie, put up numbers in the league. Does the pressure ever get to you? How tough is it mentally to work your way through that pressure? And is it, do you think it's tougher now with just things like the media, with guys like us talking hockey basically 24/7, social media, all of that? How tough is it to sort of balance the mental aspect of perhaps the pressure of the game?
I mean, you didn't have to impress the pregame show on TV.
Yeah. I mean, just one giant step, you know, people catch on quick. But I think it varies different for player to player. Obviously, the veteran player, it is a little bit easier. You've heard all the questions. Yeah. You've heard all the comments of people, and you've learned to live with it. The guys you want to watch are the guys that like Sebastian Aho. But we talked about it last year on the show. Why are these young players making such a big impact in the National Hockey League? And it goes back to their maturity. The spotlight that they're put in right from day one helps these guys grow quickly.
Yeah.
And Sebastian did a great job adapting last year. I think the organization did a great job keeping that light away from him. The veterans do a great job deflecting a lot of that, putting it as he's going to make mistakes. He's a young guy. But I think he's mature beyond his years to come back in here and continue on with what he did last year, scoring over 20 goals. I think that's going to be the bar for him. And I think when we drafted him, that obviously was our expectations coming in no matter what.
Well, I think the other part of that too, and Michael, you know this, and Shane, you know it because you won a World Junior Championship with Team Canada. That was generally a footnote. In Canada, it was big news, but for the rest of the sporting world, it's, oh, the World Junior Championships are on. Now, they're on full-time coverage. You've got to do walk-off interviews in those games. You're interviewed before you leave and go there. So I think, like, to Michael, not to, to sidestep your question, but part of it now is the young guys are used to it. Like, they've had microphones and cameras in their face from the time they're, what, 12, 13, 14, especially some of the European and Canadian players. I mean, Shane, I'm sure that you grew up with that pressure once you started making those teams, but, you know, it's now, I think, magnified. It's almost like the pressure on the junior players is what the NHL pressure used to be around the media, and now it's ramped up every step you go.
And I think when teams look at their younger players and when they're going to maybe cut them and send them back to the junior programs, they look at the junior program they're involved with, and I think those teams have also made giant steps and how to teach these young players at a younger age to deal with the media, to deal with the pressure. And when you're going to a junior team or a professional team over in Europe, the ones that have success are the ones that provide those steps and actually teach their young players all of those things that they need to know. And I think the Hurricanes have done that in their prospect camp. They're in more meetings now than they are on the ice. And they're doing that for a reason. They're talking about leadership. They're talking about accountability. How do you make these guys grow and get prepared for the things they're going to see now living on their own, going on the road? You have all this money. How do you need to act? What do you need to do to watch and be careful? From social media to all of these things out in the community, how do these young players not only stay safe, but continue to produce day in and day out?
Well, it's like Bill Peters talks about too, like the players in the game today are so much more well-prepared, as you mentioned, basically from the get-go. You have coaches with great experience teaching these guys at young levels. We'll get to the first goal program later, but you have guys like Shane Willis, like Bates Pataglia, Jeff Daniels, guys who have played in the NHL, won Stanley Cups, put up numbers, instructing these kids, and that's vital teaching at a young level. And sort of along those same lines, we're in, what, late August now. Training camp's just about a month away. Actually, exactly a month away, yeah. I think. When you were playing, what were you spending your time doing here in late August, and how much has it changed today as to where, how do players spend their time today, their off-season training? Is it more of a year-round thing?
I do believe it is more of a year-round thing, but two things that go into with how these young players develop faster and learn more and how these guys are now spending their time, to me, goes back to technology. The things these young players and now these veteran players have at their fingertips on how to properly train, how to prepare, how to recover day in and day out is so far beyond when I played or even a few years ago that these guys can use to become the best they can be. And I think these guys are doing that now in the summer. They're obviously training as hard as they can. Things are starting now to really wind up. We're a month away. When training camp opens day one, there's not a player that's not at the elite shape he needs to be in if that was opening night. You don't come in thinking, I got 3 or 4 days of training camp to kind of finish off my getting in shape. These guys come in ready to go from day one, and that's why training camps have now gotten shorter. We used to have the full 3 weeks to a month of training camp, so we'd wind things up. You play a bunch of exhibition games and get in shape, and then you go. But I think technology allows these guys and the knowledge they have, like a guy like Bill Burniston, to be able to use him and send him emails. He sends you workouts. He knows exactly what these guys need, from the training aspect to the rest to the nutrition, and all of those things I think add up. But to go back to your other question of, this is August, these guys are starting to wind it up. You'll see these guys taking the ice, and full speed is going to be put into play very soon for all of these players.
Yeah.
How important is it to be really up to almost game speed when training camp starts? I mean, is it easy to sort of have to work from behind if you come into camp perhaps maybe not in the best shape?
That's a terrible position to be in. I think whether you're a rookie, especially as a rookie, because everyone's watching you, but as a veteran player, you're coming in, and we talk about leadership all the time. Rod Brind'Amour, when he came to camp, Ron Francis, when he came to camp, they were at the top of the sheet on all those testings for a reason, because they were the leaders. They were showing by example. So you'll see our veteran players do that. But I don't think you want to start a season where you say, you know, I got a few more steps to go. No one wants to start a little bit banged up or injured. That's why we see the guys taken in a lineup for exhibition games. You want your team at 100% going full steam opening night. And I think that's very key, because you look at points at the end of the season, how close this league is. If you can get off to a hot start, in the first 10 games of the National Hockey League, those points are critical when it comes down to the wire at the end.
Shane Willis joining us here on the Canes Cast from Chuck Caton Studio.
Proud noise only.
Wow.
Thank you very much. One more thing about that, how the game has changed, Shane. It used to be these were the veterans. You guys are assured a spot on the team. And coaches don't like to play rookies or young players. Now I kind of see that's changed throughout the league, where you can't be a veteran coming into camp out of shape and say, well, I'm going to take this week, you know, to really ratchet myself up, because some young guy might come in and take your spot, especially now with the salary cap. I just can't imagine anybody, you know, wanting to walk in and do milk was a bad choice for training camp.
No one in any position right now is taking a day off. Summer camp was a few weeks ago with the young kids down at RCI. Cam Ward, Jacob Slavin, they've been in there training extremely hard right now to get ready for the season. Those are guys you think, what do they have to worry about? But there's always someone coming in who wants more playing time, who wants a job as a rookie, or a guy who's on the third line who wants to get up on the power play. So these guys know everyone's job's at stake, and the coach, at the end of the day, is going to play the guy who's producing and really at the speed that he wants to see on the ice.
And you mentioned Bill Burniston, who's the strength and conditioning coach. How much of a difference do those guys now make, not just like you said in the off season where he can send an email, but during the season where you have a guy where he can tell you, you know, maybe do this or back off of that, or we might need you to focus on this away from the ice as opposed to what you have to do during practice?
Well, it goes back to those numbers, right? They're always watching. They're watching the time clock to see how long guys have played, how long they're on the ice in practice. Are they injured? Are they a little bit banged up? What do they need to do? But in just speaking with Bill, I mean, just automatically you get that energy and excitement that he has to work with elite athletes and train them. And he brings that to work every single day. And I think that's why guys have really gelled with him well. But then to go past that, to see his knowledge of the workouts he prepares for a guy in any situation that you might be. You might be a guy who only played a few minutes that night. So he's got one where he's going to push you to make sure you stay in shape. So when your number gets called, you're ready to go. That's his job, to make sure he has elite performance from his athletes every single night, no matter what the situation is. And he's been doing a great job since he's joined this organization.
All right, I'm just going to put this out there. Michael Smith, I'll start with you.
Yeah, and if I like it, I can take it.
And if not, just send it right back.
Correct.
So now that we've gotten a good look at what we think this team, what this lineup is going to be, and we're getting closer to the start of camp and preseason, where does the strength of this team lie? And I'm going with on ice, not off ice, not in the room, not this. On ice, where does the strength of this team lie? To be full disclosure, we kind of put out a list of, this is what it could be. I put out four things: defense, goaltending, special teams, puck possession. Is there something that I'm missing that you guys think is the strength, or is the strength one of those four things?
Well, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head with the first one in defense. I mean, we talked about last week where the Hurricanes' defense stacks up in the National Hockey League, and I think we both came to the consensus that it was certainly top five worthy. So that's, I think, going to continue. I don't see that changing even with the tweaks the Hurricanes made. I think that only makes the defense better when you bring in a guy like Trevor Van Riemsdyk and then look to maybe a guy like Hayden Fleury or Roland McEwen or Trevor Carrick or Klaas Dahlbeck, someone to fill that six spot. I think the Hurricanes defense is only going to be able to take another step, and it's going to cement itself as one of the best defenses in the National Hockey League. I think that's definitely one of the team's strengths, and it just sort of builds from there. They're strong in their own end, and that the hope is that leads to goals at the other end of the ice.
Shane Willis.
I agree, and I think those first three you mentioned, defense, goaltending, and specialty teams, really all come together in one, especially the defense and the goaltending. Those guys working together, Cam Ward, now Scott Darling coming in as well, I think he's going to be eager. The group of defense, Steve Smith talked about it all the time. The communication between your goaltender and your defense is huge on how well we can shut it down in our defensive zone. Then we talk about the defense activating up into the zone. Van Riemsdyk, a guy who wants to jump into the play, is going to be given that green light to try and get up there and help the offense, which really started to come together at the end of last season. We saw Jeff Skinner get going. We saw Elias Lindholm really start to heat up on the offensive side of the puck. You bring in specialty teams. I think that area with our penalty kill has obviously been the highlight this past season for sure. The job Steve Smith did there, that goes back to our defense and our goaltending, obviously. Guys were blocking shots, but when the puck finally came through, we had huge saves from Cam Ward. So those three things moving forward, I think, are great. The question you have at number three in the specialty teams, Can the power play get going? And I think that's going to be one of the keys we look at and we talk about all the time from week to week. If that thing can get rolling on the power play, we all know, the fans know and the coaches know, your power play can win or lose you hockey games in the same sense.
Well, we've seen it get going. I think the question, Shane, is can it be consistent all year and not do the, hey, you know, we're operating at like a 26% clip here because Justin Falk has scored 12 power play goals in 14 games, or, you know, you kind of go in that valley when there's a drought. But that, to me, is the key. If you can get that consistent power play, we know the penalty kill is going to be really good again. So we'll see. I think it is, though. They're building from the defense out. That's where the strength of this team does lie. And, you know, they're built to, if they can get three goals, this could be a team that could win a lot of hockey games this year.
Yeah, and looking at the power play, Shane, you've played on the power play in your career. What is the key to a consistently productive power play?
Well, I think number one, in Mike's fourth point of puck possession, the zone entry is key, and you'll hear our coaches talk about it all the time. If you can't enter the zone with speed and have full puck possession, it makes it that much harder. If you're having to dump the puck in and go get it, or it's a scramble for a loose puck and it's getting sent back down the ice, there's nothing worse than being on a power play and chasing the puck 200 feet every minute to go back and try and reset and come down.
Because then you're just spending energy that you otherwise shouldn't need to spend.
Exactly. Your skill players are going all the way back, and then they're coming all the way back down. So you see our penalty killer, which does a great job standing them up at the blue line and knocking those plays down. Our breakout has to be key. But then I like to see a little bit more patient. I think we have plays set up that we want to do, but sometimes I think we're firing away a little bit too early. Let's take those 100% shots that are for surely going to get through. And then really, we talk about traffic going to the net and how much of a loss big Brian Bickle was last year. But I think the skill in this power play started to show a little bit more at the end of the season. And assistant coach Rod Brindamore knows he's going to be watching tape. He's going to get his guys in place to have that puck possession going in and then moving it around for those great scoring opportunities.
Shane has just touched on something where fans, bear with, you know, send all the hate mail or hate tweet to me on this one. But there is nothing to me that gets under my skin than when you hear, shoot, because yes, you want to get the puck on net and you can't score unless you shoot. But Shane, you know from doing it, just because the puck's at the point doesn't mean that's the right shot or the right time. You have to have, the way that goals are scored now, you have to have a guy in your sweater, your jersey, near the net for a rebound opportunity. The other thing too, goalies are too darn good today, where if they can see the shot, they're 9 out of 10 times, and I'd actually go 9.5, it seems like they're going to make the save. So it's like what you say, there's that fine line between letting her rip and having the patience to know that that's the right shot on a power play.
Well, and then you talk about guys sacrificing their body. The way guys block shots now today in the National Hockey League and totally sacrifice everything to not let those shots get through, that's why sometimes the one more pass really isn't that bad a thing. You pump fake, maybe slide it over to another guy who's got a clear lane through, but the key is, again, that full possession and taking those shots that you know are at least going to get through, and you're forcing the goaltender to make a save. Sometimes you're just not going to beat the goalie. You tip your hat and say, hey, he made some key saves tonight. But those shots have to get through the net. And, you know, when I was shooting, it was more like, shoot, but hit the net, Willie. But, you know, every once in a while it was high and wide. I don't know, understand that. I think it was a bad curve or something.
Yeah, probably ice. Choppy ice.
I'll just blame
ice
it on the stick. Good, But I think getting those pucks through, and you got to force the goaltender to make the saves. The more, it's one thing to shoot. But if the puck's never getting there, you're obviously losing possession potentially, or now it's a 50-50 up for grabs battle in the corner.
Yeah, and the other thing, one more thing, it's that extra pass isn't a bad idea. I agree with that. It's the extra pass after the extra pass. It's that fine line. You got to know this is the right extra pass versus I need to put it on net. Like Michael Smith in for the Tropical Depression street hockey team.
Yeah, I've scored many goals this year. I've scored zero.
Okay.
But and going back to, you know,
I don't believe you.
Well, you just look at the stat sheet.
I do believe him with zero.
I've got a few shots. My Corsi might be all right. Anyway, so
yes, thank you. Anyway, quick.
Going back to the power play and having Justin Falk as a weapon there, we've talked about it on the podcast too before. Is if guys like Brett Pesce and Noah Hanifin can develop their shots to be as much of a weapon as Justin Falk's is, I think you see the power play not only take a step and be more consistent, but then you have more options. Then you don't have to keep Justin Falk out there for the entire 2 minutes. Maybe you want to. Maybe he wants to. It's not necessarily a bad thing because his shot is so much of a weapon. But if you can develop shots from guys like Hanifin and Pesci to where you can rely on them to consistently get the puck to the net, I think that's only a benefit for the Hurricanes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I'm going to put you on the spot, Shane Willis. Seeing training camp is coming up. Do you have a PG to PG-13 training camp story you can tell us from a moment of Shane Willis's time in the National Hockey League where maybe former head coach Paul Maurice Wilbur had a few things to say to you or the collective group or a pretty good, I don't know, just a good memory of what training camp does for NHL players?
Well, I think the main thing is the way the young guys obviously come together, you're always nervous. The training camp story I'll tell about myself coming in, the year I actually made the team, we're getting our room keys in Florida. We're in Fort Myers in for the three-week long haul, and we're all thinking, I wonder what kind of chance we have this year, right? So you're getting room keys, and everyone from the minors the year before is like, oh, we're rooming together, and I get my key, and I'm like, great, I'm not rooming with anyone I know. I wonder, did I get stuck with the token European guy? Who am I rooming with? So I go up, the key goes in the door, I swing it open, and I walk in, and he goes, hey, kid. And now general manager Ron Francis, but back then, elite player on his way to the Hall of Fame, Ron Francis is laying on the bed beside him. So immediately I get nervous and I'm like, wow, I'm going to be real good in this room.
I got the wrong key.
So we went through the first night, you know, he was laying there and he throws over the remote control and he says, here you go, I'm just going to go to sleep. I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm 23 years old thinking, man, it's early, but. So I turned the volume really low on the TV because I'm like, I did not want to disrupt this man trying to get a sleep over there. I mean, I don't think the volume was even at a 1. It was probably at a 0.5, and I'm just staring at the screen. Finally, I'm like, well, I'll just go to sleep. So I go to sleep. We go to practice the next day. We come back, and it's the next night, and we're sitting there, and he kind of looks at me, and he goes, you snore a little bit, eh, kid? And I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, I am really disrupting what this guy is trying to do here at training camp. So we go through one more night, and then we get back to the room on day 3, and he throws over a pack of breathe rights and he goes, hey, why don't you try these? So, I mean, for a week, I was so nervous not to upset this guy and disrupt his sleep, but he was the nicest could be, really took me under his wing, took me out for dinner right away as a veteran guy, started trying to show me what it was about. So obviously a funny story, and I felt horrible the whole time. And needless to say, he was not my roommate the entire season when I made the team. Tommy Westland, a great scout now for the Pittsburgh Penguins, I believe, unfortunately got that card pulled that I was his roommate. But he got some tricks up his sleeve to try and help me with that. But that was my training camp story. My, you know, going in thinking, I got a chance to make this team. And then you see your roommate and you kind of think, I really do. But now my snoring is going to ruin that opportunity.
I just ruined our playoff chance because I snore.
You know, he definitely went to Coach Maurice and was like, no, wait, this guy can't make the team. He snores too much.
This guy cannot fall asleep on the airplane.
He's going to keep me up at night.
There's not enough oxygen in the plane to get us cross country if Shane falls asleep. Somebody has to be in charge of keeping him awake. That's an awesome story.
He's about
to
break the budget on breathe rates because they actually kind of worked a little bit.
Did you have that moment, though, like when you walked in the room, like, am I in the right room? I should
be. Yes, I was. I'm like, why does this guy have a roommate? Like, why is it me?
Well, and talk about the game changing. I mean, that's what's so different about today's game there are only a handful of guys who have roommates. I mean, how was that dynamic, having a roommate? Did you find that beneficial to just your sort of coming up in the league, being able to sort of go along with it with somebody else?
Well, yeah, I think it's disappointing. As an ex-player, I don't know, the older guys probably like it now. Right. But as a young guy, I mean, you want to have a roommate. You don't want to sit in your room, not be able to talk to anyone. You know, Tommy was a great guy. He came in just a year before me. But to be able to just talk about different things that were going on with the team, maybe vent a little bit if you're frustrated, having a guy you could confide with, whether it be a roommate or not. I mean, I disrupted Tommy, obviously, because I had a little bit of a snoring issue. But other than that, I think it's nice to have a roommate, especially for these young guys on the road, to be able to talk to, hang out with. You don't get stuck eating, you know, room service every night. As an older guy, that's the go-to as a young guy, right? Well, I'll just order room service. That's horrible. Get out of the room, stretch your legs out, get some fresh air. Look at some of these cities you're going into, explore them, and then go back and just go to sleep. Being in your room nonstop is horrible.
I think it actually does help out because we've got a prime example. Sebastian Aho roomed with Teuvo Teravainen on the road this year.
Right.
And, I mean, that's – you've got
to think about the language barriers and stuff like that of guys coming from overseas into this country, being able to show them around or be with a guy who's been over here for a few years to help those youngsters develop and adapt to these situations.
Yeah, especially for the European players because, you know, in this case, Sebastian Aho didn't have to speak English all the time. It could still feel – a little bit like home for a guy who'd never been away from home. So there's plus. But, when you get to the veteran status, I'm going to have the room to myself. I've done enough, listening to venting or venting myself. I'll do what I can.
I don't know. I still – the youth team we take to Quebec City every year. I got a roommate. I mean, it's awesome. I just bring back my old days of having a roommate, but maybe that's just me.
Do you still use breathe rates?
No.
Then it's not awesome for your roommate.
Well, I'm a good roommate. I bring earplugs now. Stepped up the game a little bit.
For said, them? Like, here, you're going to need these?
Wear these. I apologize. It is dry here in Quebec City.
I will admit, I am a terrible roommate because I take over the bathroom.
Oh, you like, just scatter everything?
Yeah, it's just everything.
Stay inside your zone.
Well, I don't have anybody to zone up with. It's good. I can
you just walk
spread
in
out.
And empty the suitcase all over the room?
No, I don't do that. I'm very neat.
Oh.
I generally live out of my suitcase. I hate taking things out of my suitcase because that means I got to put them back or I'll forget them.
It's true. You just go with the wrinkled look.
You've seen me on TV, Shane. You know the answer to that question. Speaking of, though, two guys who are going to be counted on, and we kind of touched on this a little bit, two guys who are going to be counted on to be the bulk of the offense, Sebastian Aho and Jeff Skinner. Is it one of those situations where we should expect – you know, you've said it, maybe 40 goals for Jeff Skinner. That's now not an out of the realm of possibility for him. He's up there with some of the best goal scorers in the league now in the last 4 years. Sebastian Aho burst on the scene. Is it realistic for us to expect those two guys can carry the bulk of the goal scoring, or somebody else has got to kind of step in? And the way that I look at it is I think that's what the strength of the offense is. This team could be balanced. There could be five guys who can score 20 or more this year for this club, which would be a huge help. Maybe even six guys who could score 20 or more for this team. And I'll put Elias Lindholm's name as a guy who needs to kind of get to that level and show he can do that consistently. Or can this team succeed with these are the two guys who are going to score the majority of our goals?
Well, I think if you look at the top teams in the National Hockey League, they have that. They have the four or five guys that are jumping over the 20-goal mark. At the same time, I think we need to make sure we manage our expectations, especially with a young guy like Sebastian Aho. Second year is definitely harder. I mean, teams are now keyed in on you. You're not surprising anybody. Goalies know what you like to do, your tendencies. Guys are watching you harder. They're playing harder on you on the puck. And Sebastian needs to be getting ready for that as well in his second year. But do I think he can score 20 again? For sure. Jeff Skinner, I think, needs to be that year in and year out 30-goal scorer. I think if Jeff Skinner hits 40, you're going to get that every now and then. It's hard to get 40 goals in the league. If you looked around, I'm not even sure the number. I'm a horrible analytics guy of guys who have scored 40 goals this last season. But Jeff Skinner, I've said it before, needs to be that 30-goal guy. And I think the biggest thing that impressed me last year at the end of the season with Jeff Skinner, when he was scoring those goals, there was a different look in his eye. There was a different fire that he showed when that puck was going in the net. It wasn't the smile that we all knew and loved when Jeff broke into this league of like, yeah, hey, I scored again. This is awesome. He had that fire to say, hey, I'm going to go get another one before this game's over. And I think that impressed me the most about Jeff's play at the end of the season, his hunger and his passion to score those goals for this hockey team.
340 goal scorers last year.
Right.
Three. Sidney Crosby with 44, Nikita Kucherov with 40, Auston Matthews with 40.
Okay.
So, and then two at 39, Brad Marchand and Vladimir Tarasenko.
Right. So then you put Jeff Skinner in the category of 30 goals. I think that's the expectation we should have. Sebastian Aho, I want him in that 20-goal range. Does he jump up in the higher 20s this year? Would be awesome. But if he gets that 20-goal mark only, I'm still extremely happy, and you have to have that balance. You got a guy like Justin Williams coming in, a little PP specialist and scoring those big goals late in the game. He could get 20 goals. Elias Lindholm started to come on. Does Teravainen all of a sudden light a fire on him where he really gets rolling? Like you said, Mike, there's guys on this team that have the ability. It's all about that confidence. And to me, getting rolling early on in this season.
What year did you pot your 20, your rookie year? Was that 2000-2001 or 99-2000?
2000-2001.
13 guys scored 40 goals the year that you scored 20 as a rookie. And I mean, and now it's three. So It's hard. It's hard to do that.
Well, and the game is theoretically more open than it was then.
But
I mean, that's the
thing. Is it, though?
Well, that's theoretically, because the argument is that it is because the red line's out. But based on those goal totals, perhaps it's not.
And there's
not.
More. They're saying there's more power plays now, so there's more offensive chances is where I think they bring in the open it up kind of thing. There's no red line. There's not as many clutch and grab like back in the day. But
right.
To me, defensemen have gotten more mobile. They're better. And goalies have gotten better. You know, we talked about the goalies always complaining, oh, they're going to change our equipment, make it smaller. Now we're getting, you know, the back end of something because we're better athletes than they were 10 years ago. And I believe that. These goaltenders are extremely extraordinary athletes of what they can do from lateral movement to being able to see that puck. But I think all those things combined, defensemen getting more mobile and better players to the goalie becoming better, it's harder to score goals in this league.
And you mentioned it earlier, too, defensemen committing themselves to shot blocking, which is, I think, a newer development in the league. The emphasis put on blocking shots and making sure that the goalie doesn't even have to see a shot, I think, changes it a bit, too, yeah.
The old shot block back in the day was the two-pad stack by a player sliding on his side in front of you. I mean, you don't ever see that anymore.
Right.
It's the one knee down, you turn your whole body, and you just eat it.
Yeah.
You turn your head and say, don't hit
Craig,
me in the face.
Craig Ludwig with the, you know, Time magazines.
Craig didn't even have to go down.
He
just put his legs together, and he was like a second goaltender out there.
If you saw some of those, go Google that. If you don't know what we're talking about, Google Craig Ludwig knee pads. You'll see exactly what we're talking about. Or shin guards, you'll see what it was. I mean, that wasn't even fair.
No.
Those were bigger goalie pads than what, you know, Jacques Plante was wearing.
This is true, although his were lighter. Jacques Plante's were probably 50 pounds a piece.
Exactly. Never mind. Nothing like putting wet leather stuffed with, you know, cotton or whatever it was that they had back in the day. But I do want to get into the – it's a much more wide-open game where it's not, because all we keep hearing about is we got to get more offense, got to do more offense, this and that. But last year, remember, we were seeing 4-3 games, 5-4 games at the start of the year. And I kept trying to figure out, well, why did that happen? Why did that happen? Then I remember, oh, that's right. We had the World Cup of Hockey. And you had players who had gotten a month's worth of great hockey in before the start of the season. And then they were really ready to go. And some of the guys were more fine-tuned. And some of the goalies weren't ready for what those guys were bringing. I'm not saying that we can bring the World Cup of Hockey in every single year. But, you know, that's the only thing that I could lead it to until the coaches figured out a way to muck up the game again and you know, block all the shots that we see.
Yeah, there's always going to be a way to stifle offense. I think you see that anytime a new rule is introduced. It might work for a year, might work for a couple months, but eventually coaches figure out a way to coach around it, because that is their job. Their job is to succeed, is to win, and you do that by figuring a way to stop the other team. So that's inevitably what happens. I will be interested to see how competition stacks up at the beginning of this year because of the lack of the World Cup of Hockey. Preseason hockey is never high end. It's never top speed or anything. But World Cup of Hockey was.
Are you saying that preseason hockey might not be the best thing that we see all year?
Well, you know.
Okay.
Reviews are mixed. But it is especially important, you know, as it comes to evaluating what you have in terms of your team. But without the World Cup of Hockey, without that high end competition before the season, I do wonder how it's going to affect players heading into the regular season this year.
It'll be interesting. I think.
Yeah,
I
it's definitely hard to get to the veteran guys to get to that elite level in where they play 2-3 exhibition games out of the total of the 6 they have scheduled or 5 they have scheduled, because you're not going to play every game as a veteran.
No.
You're like, I'm not playing all these with a bunch of young guys that are really going all out trying to make a spot on a team. It gets a little bit crazy out there at times, but I agree with you. I think the play at the start of the season may be down a little bit for some of those guys. But again, this game has gotten so fast and so competitive that you have to be ready on opening night. You have to be ready for those first 5-6 games and really put up some points, because, again, there is the difference in making the playoffs or not making it. It could be those first 3 games of the season, and we've seen that before here with this organization.
Sort of to bring it full circle here, we started talking about how the game has changed, how kids prepare from a very early age, and you're definitely involved in that as the youth and amateur hockey coordinator for the Hurricanes. The First Goal program, a big initiative this summer, giving kids the opportunity to learn the game of hockey at an incredibly affordable rate. How's that program going, and what can fans expect to see as we move forward?
Well, I can say, only being in its second year, it was unveiled last year throughout the entire league. Obviously, the National Hockey League and the NHLPA being involved to kind of help grow this fund, to be able to put all this equipment and this money in play to help new kids start playing hockey. And I think the Carolina Hurricanes have done a great job standing behind this program. And this year, in the state of North Carolina, we were able to outfit 650 kids with brand new equipment. They get 7 ice sessions at one of their local facilities. They're going to get 2 tickets to a Canes game. And just to hear the feedback from parents, I'm lucky enough to be a part of it. Jeff Daniels and Bates Battaglia also helping out with the program. All the great volunteers at the rink, I can tell you, when you have 50 brand new hockey players that step on the ice, some of them never have stepped on this ice before. Without the volunteers that I have helping with this program, it doesn't go. So first of all, big thanks goes out to those volunteers and the local facilities for helping us with the ice. But to watch these kids' faces, to see them laugh and all of a sudden pick up and fall in love with the sport of hockey, it's just a great program. We're out there every weekend right now for a couple more weeks before it ends. We're getting ready to give these kids a certificate. It's so fun to be out there week in, week out with these youngsters and to watch them grow from week one to where you're like, you get off and you're sweating and your back hurts because you're literally helping these kids get up and down, up and down, up and down.
Right.
To now we're at week 5, we just finished, and they're all scooting around the ice. We set up 6 stations, and I saw one guy the other day. I'm like, you made it to all 6 stations today. That's so awesome. And he's like, yeah, I did it. So, I mean, just that sheer excitement, and that's all they want to do. We're trying to create fun. We're trying to say, these kids go off the ice and say, what do I do next? And those are the emails I'm getting now from parents is, what do we do next when this program ends?
All right, 2 things. I've got a follow-up to that. How gratifying is it when you see the first-timers on there and you're like, yeesh, but by the end of it, they kind of get it. But then the ones who kind of return and you see that, oh, man, from last year to this year, it's a completely different player. How satisfying is that selfishly for you? Because, I mean, Shane, you invest a lot of your time into this. How cool is it when you see those kids and it's like, you know, thanks, Coach Willis. Thanks for taking the time, and you see those kids putting in the time and getting better at playing this great game.
It is awesome. Obviously, we're not going to sit there and think we're going to be able to retain 650 kids. Some kids are going to be like, I just don't like this. It's too hard, and that's the nature of sports. But I was talking with my assistant, Emil Hartman, this year after summer camp. We had 4 kids that were in the first goal program last year come to our regular summer camp this year at RCI.
Wow.
And to watch them skate around and the smile on their face and to see the improvement in 6 to 7 months has been unbelievable to watch. The smiles are still on their faces. Their stickers are still on their helmets, so we know where they came from. So the program's been extremely gratifying. I know Jeff and Bates have a great time now. Bates has his young boy out there doing the program now. He was a little bit tentative on day 1. All Bates had to do, he said, was go body check him once into the boards, and he was off and going. So, you know, we use different techniques. It's about finding what it takes to energize that one kid. We have a group, a ton of young girls out there trying the game. They're loving it. Their smiles are always going around the ice. But the sheer determination some of these kids show, like there were some kids on day 1 and even week 2 where I'm like, man, I don't know if I would have tried as hard as that youngster has tried for a full hour, now 2 hours, going up and down off the ice, just falling constantly. But to get back up and to keep going. So that gratification, you see it in the parents as the kids come off, the cameras are out, the smiles that are there to watch all these kids now in our local rinks. It's an awesome program. Again, the Hurricanes, the National Hockey League, and the NHLPA, big supporters, yeah, and have done a great job getting this program in every market.
Yeah, that's awesome. It was $97 this year for new equipment, ice time, as you mentioned, instruction from guys like Shane Willis, Jeff Daniels, Bates Battaglia.
Guys who have played for the Stanley Cup Final, played in the playoffs, scored 20 goals as a rookie, won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it's
have
awesome.
Coached in the NHL.
2 tickets to a Hurricanes game, so you get to learn the sport that then you eventually go get to see, and hopefully it leads to, as you said, more camps, more youth hockey involvement. It's all about growing the game, and it's awesome to hear it's been so successful. Can fans expect to see it again next year?
Yes, I believe it is. I've heard no communication from the NHL or any reason why it wouldn't go. Obviously, here in our market, the time we can run it, which is July and August, is really the time when we have the most ice available to do this program. But again, the steps are set up. So once you do this program, immediately after Labor Day, you can step into that next step program you need, whether it be Kinder Canes or Learn to Play 1. Everything is set up for you to continue on their journey of one day. Who knows? If one kid ever gets drafted and he says, I want to thank the First Goal program, I'll lose it, because that would be an amazing story for someone to come from this all the way through the right steps. And we're trying to provide the information to parents. I think that's the biggest thing, is helping parents understand, well, what do we do next? How do I get him to become a better skater? And the local rinks around here have done a great job having all the things in place that they'll need to continue on this journey to one day, hopefully, when they come and watch this game, their dream is now to sit in that locker room and put on a Hurricanes jersey.
Well, you know that day is going to come, Shane. It is. I mean, just you see players drafted from Phoenix, Arizona. Austin Matthews, the number one overall pick. Players coming from Texas. Players coming from Florida now in the National Hockey League. It's not that far off. But as a parent, you've got a youngster who plays. When parents ask you, what's the one thing I can do, or how can I make sure that, you know, my little one is getting the most out of this, or I can help them out, is there a, like, just one core piece of advice? We know every player and every situation is different, but is there something like, hey, be encouraging, keep it fun for them? Or is there a different tack to it where, you know, wake up at 4 a.m, make sure they're at the rink at 4:30?
No, that is definitely not it. I think if you ask, in my situation or any NHL guy, the first thing they'll tell you about their parents is their encouragement and always being there for them. And I just read a good book. I'll give it a little plug. I don't know where he is on the Amazon tour, but Mike Matheny, the coach of the St. Louis Cardinals, has a book out called The Matheny Manifesto. And he talks about how youth sports have changed and the influence parents have had on that change as far as almost going too competitive or the things they're talking to their kids about. And he talks so plainly in there about when he was growing up, and all my parents did was cheer. And I think that's the biggest thing. If you're cheering, not yelling at the referee or trying to coach your kid from outside the glass, because I can tell you, as a coach on the ice or even as a player, they can't hear you, number one. And if they do hear you, it sounds like blah, blah, blah. So, but hearing you cheer and encourage them, I think, is the best thing at all. No one wants to come off, whether they scored or not, and have that question of, why didn't you score? As soon as they get in the car, hey, is your coach doing this? So I think the biggest thing for me is encouraging and supporting whatever your kid wants to do. Don't force them to go to the rink if they don't want to. Don't force them to go to the soccer field if that's not their thing. Let them explore different things like this first goal offers. For $97, we're asking for your kid to give it a try. A brand new player who's never skated before, let him try it for once. I've had a mom come up to me and say, my young daughter has just told me she wants to bail on competitive dance because she wants to become a hockey player. I'm not sure if mom is really happy about that, but it makes me smile because she let her try it. She encouraged her, and this young girl can skate like the wind already. And I'm like, that's awesome. So be that encouraging factor. Keep every door open for your kids. And I think that's the biggest thing for me to a kid really taking charge in a sport and really falling in love with it.
Well, Shane and I grew up in places where you were expected to play hockey or hockey was readily available. And to have the opportunity to play here in Raleigh, in the Triangle, for $97 to get somebody on the ice and to find out if they'd like a sport that, you know, 15 years ago, and we know that this is the 20th anniversary, 15 years ago you might have had, what, maybe three places to go play hockey, and I think I might be overshooting that by two. You know, seriously, for $97 to have the skill level, to have all of that, folks, I can't tell you, just let them try it and let them play. By the way, let them play different sports. Growing up, we all played different sports. Let them try hockey, see if they like it. And if they do, especially women's hockey now, the opportunities that are there for especially Team USA and Team Canada, what's happening there. I mean, it's hockey is for everyone, they say it, and you can't do any better than what you're going to find here in Carolinas with that first goal program.
And then just a small plug, of course, I still get emails now of parents saying, we missed this year, how do we get involved? We'll start, again, promoting this in April before the season ends. And then our registration this year, we hope to do it the same next year, opens May the 1st online. I can tell you, this thing is catching fire. So be ready on May 1st to register because it fills up quick. I have parents who couldn't get in a location here in Raleigh, but they wanted their kids in so bad, they signed up for Greensboro. They drive an hour and a half every weekend to let their kids try this sport. And I tell you what, the mom is one of the biggest supporters because her son is absolutely hooked and he is flying out there. So be ready to go May the 1st. Look for this stuff. If you don't follow us on social media, please do so, because that's where we do a lot of our advertising. Michael Smith, Nikki Stout, and her great staff do a great job promoting this program and helping us get the dates and times out there to you. But May the 1st is the date. Put in your calendar now for 2018 to be register for first goal.
That's right. Awesome.
Yeah, that's spectacular.
A perfect way to end the podcast.
Well, we do have time.
Oh, we got time for questions.
We got time for just a few now.
Okay.
Here in Chuck Caton's studio, which we've been putting up pictures of and people are commenting on.
Yeah, it's state of the art.
Proud Noise Only.
Very much so.
Has anyone ever asked if they can come to the studio?
Yes, actually, they have. I've said you don't see the egg cartons we've stapled up to be the
There's
noise
no more
producers.
Room. There's now three of us in here.
Exactly.
Jam packed.
Yeah, you can only come in and take a tour when it's only two people hosting the
Filled
Canes
to capacity.
Cast. This question though comes in from Jordan Pirelli, which is not looking for a whom, but do you think the Canes name a captain by the start of the season? If not, when? I'm going to say yes. Just because I'm tired of the captain question.
I'm going to say yes also.
I will also say yes, but again, reiterate what former guys have said, including the guy who hoisted the cup in here and Rod Brindamore saying, to manage your expectations, it's important to have leaders in that room, not necessarily one leader that wears that C. Is it a part of the game? Yes. But Alex Ovechkin wears the C in Washington. Does he wear it because he's a vocal leader in the locker room? No, it's because he's their best player. Is Connor McDavid at the age of 19 the most vocal guy in Edmonton? Probably not, but he's their best player. I think the Hurricanes are doing a good thing by letting guys mature and finding that guy that they really want to put that C on for a long time.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing with the National Hockey League, the letter, while it's still very important and carries a lot of weight, it's not what it used to be because of what Shane just said, because – it doesn't necessarily go to the guy who is equipped to be the best leader anymore. It's used for other reasons to try to motivate players, saying, okay, all right, now it's your team, like with what Washington did with Alex Ovechkin. You know, need you to be more serious or more committed to playing defense. Well, we'll put the captaincy on you. Now you have to act like that. I just think that the way the game's set up, and we've heard it how many times here, there are a lot of guys. And Shane, how many guys did you play with who didn't wear a letter, but they wore a leader of – the hockey team. When something needed to be said, they were the guy who would step up.
There's so many guys like that, and Justin Williams is one of those guys that was doing that in Washington. You know, he was the vocal guy in the room because he's won cups before. He knew what to say at the right times, and you need a guy in the room like that. This team that we have here is not a team that's broken and fractured that you need all of a sudden a captain to glue them together. They're starting to come together. They're a group of guys that trust each other and have fun together out there. So, to me, it's not that much of a panic button yet.
Yeah.
But do I think they're going to get one? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Smith is the captain of the Canes cast, but he doesn't want to wear the C. So.
Well, I don't know who voted on that.
I did. Okay. I gave it to you. So one more Twitter question. This one from Paul Lawson. I'll have to paraphrase. Did Shane share any of the beverage that I gave him last year, or did he keep the whole lot for himself?
Well, I got to say, I love Paul Lawson. Probably the biggest Caniac who lives overseas. Has joined us for the alumni game twice. Once he came solo. The next time he came with his family who enjoyed the area. Paul Lawson is a great fan, a great friend. And
you're not answering the question, Shane. Did
you share
it with anybody?
Of course I did. I'm a good team player. Of course I shared.
All right.
It was tasty. I'm empty, though. Just saying, Paul. I am empty.
We're all empty.
Exactly.
When are you coming back would be a better question.
I'm just saying, I've got water and I've got Gatorade, and you're just having me out here.
Did FedEx
with
stop
our
shipping?
In the wind.
Did FedEx stop running out of your town? It's been a long summer.
It has been. And that'll do it for this edition of the Canes Cast, Episode 8. The
past draft dive featuring Shane Willis, of course.
He is the Jedi of the Shane. You're welcome back anytime.
Anytime.
We hooked up
the force, boys.
We
just
hooked
use
up that
force.
Fancy microphone just for you.
Man, if Paul delivers, man, we could have quite a show.
Oh, can't wait for that.
That's the lost episode.
We're back next week.
Yeah, back next week with special guest Kyle Hanlon, the OP, original podcaster, back on for one last ride before he and his family move on to the next chapter in their lives.
For the best TV pregame co-host that there is out there in the National Hockey League, bar none, he's Shane Willis. That's Michael Smith. I'm Mike Maniscalco.
Bye.
See ya.